originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest this evening, she won the Sovereign Award in Canada for Outstanding Apprentice Jockey in both 2001 and 2002. She's won graded stakes aboard the likes of Mind That Bird, Great Hot, and of course Game On Dude, who made her the first female rider to win the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap, the Grade 1 Hollywood Gold Cup, and the first female jockey to ride in the Dubai World Cup. With 1,060 wins and over $52 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce jockey Chantal Sutherland. Chantal, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Happy to be on the show.
So excited to sit here with you for an hour, Chantal. Pick your brain. You're currently riding at Churchill Downs, and let's just say you're making an impression and you're taking names. I love it. How do you like Kentucky?
I do. I love Kentucky. It's a little more humid than California, but it's nice. The people are really super friendly. You got that southern charm is still here from I experienced that in New Orleans, but it's very nice. Everyone's really friendly.
Yes, you rode in. You rode at Fairgrounds over the winter, then decided to move your tack to Kentucky. What made you make that move? First to Fairgrounds, then to Kentucky.
When I was in California, I just wasn't having a good feeling for what was kind of where it was going, and I wasn't doing as well as I thought, and I've always wanted to come to Kentucky and try Churchill Downs and Keeneland. So in order to get there, I needed to do the stepping stone, which would be New Orleans, to get to know, you know, this group of trainers and start building business towards that. So I went to New Orleans, and then I wanted to come here last year, but I got hurt pretty bad in January, and I was out for a while. So I had to, you know, wait a little bit and redo it again, and now I'm finally here. So I'm really excited to be here.
Tell us about that injury in January.
January 25th, I had a horse on the grass called McFeely. He's a 2-year-old. I had been working him on the dirt. I really liked him. And we were on the turf course for the first time. He's a little green looking around. And then we hit the turn. I kind of asked him to really, you know, put himself forward and get to business. And he's pretty powerful. And I think I might have scared him a little bit. And he overreached, and he grabbed his front foot with his back foot, and he fell down. And then I fell down his neck, slid on the turf course, broke my collarbone, and then flipped over and broke my knee.
Yikes. And you're back. You didn't have any hesitations.
Well,
I
was Tulane Hospital. I had amazing doctors. They did surgery on both, put a rod and some screws and some other fun stuff in both injuries, and actually was able to, be driving a car in 3 days and doing yoga in 3 weeks, 2 weeks, and then I was back on a horse in 2.5 months.
That's absolutely incredible. And we hear these kind of stories all the time when it comes to jockeys. And obviously, as a self-employed contractor, that gets you going a little bit quicker. Given your business, you have to keep that business, especially when you're injured. It's so tough. Why do you think that is, Chantel? Why do you think jockeys have such quick recoveries, yourself specifically?
I think because we're pretty fit, we're pretty healthy, and our metabolisms are kicking. We do a lot of exercise, and I think we just heal a lot faster. I mean, I'm big on vitamins and eating healthy. I try to keep my body really flexible with yoga, and I cycle, I weightlift, and I think just in general, just taking care of your body, your health, and I guess when you're out, you just have to heal. So just lots of water and lots of vitamins, and you got to get yourself back to the track. So you do everything you can to get there.
What other injuries have you suffered throughout your career?
You know what? Other than a broken finger and I had a concussion, that's it. In 19 years, so it's not bad.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Now that you're in Kentucky, you're back in action, you're feeling great, what goals have you set for yourself here?
I've always wanted to be in a derby, so that's definitely one of the goals. Just building business with trainers and getting out there. And I like getting on young horses. I like getting on all kinds of horses. But if I work them in the morning, and I love working with trainers to find out, how they're doing, and I like to get to know horses, and then I think it helps me with my racing. And I just love a trainer that is open to working with me, and I work with them, and just building relationships and doing the best that I can out here.
Well, Chantel, let's go back to the very beginning and talk about how this all started. Now you're a college graduate. You graduated from York University, and you're very educated. You took maybe a different path than most riders take. So tell us how you grew up in Canada. What was that like?
I love Canada. I grew up on a farm in Canada. It was my dad was a horse owner, and my sister and I were show jumpers. We did eventing, three-day eventing, dressage. We started with equitation, and then did all that for a few years. I had ponies, horses. And then one of my dad's really good friends had a breeding operation and also a training facility. So I broke babies when I was like 13, 14. And then I wasn't allowed to get on the thoroughbred until I was 16. And as a summer job, I galloped them. And I also did landscaping, and I worked as a cashier at my dad's Canadian Tire store. And then I went to private school and had a horse there. And then I was kind of tired of horses and did other sports, field hockey and downhill skiing. And then after I was into college, I wanted to be a jockey. And my dad said, finish university and you can be a jockey. So I graduated and went straight to the track.
What did your dad think when you're younger this time and you're working at the farm and you're 16 years old and you're galloping horses? What did he think of that?
I think he just wanted his two, like, I have a sister and he has a son. My sister and I, he wanted us to be tough and to be able to be self-sufficient. And we were really good riders. So he was happy for us to be, working on the farm. His best friend, was the manager. So, he kept us tabs on us. He just wanted us to stay away from bullies pretty much. And as long as we were playing with horses, we were okay and working hard and making money.
Now, your father was involved with standard breads, and why didn't you decide to go down that path?
My dad had us jog in his trotters. My sister and I, we put the saddle on them and trained them on the farm after they'd been injured, or he had a lot of horses that would do layups at our farm. So we did do that. I did go to Melbourne in Australia, and I was actually on the trotters, and I was in a race. But as far as being a driver, it didn't really interest me as much as being a jockey, only because I love to ride, and I don't know if it would have been the same experience, you know, in a cart driving. I like the speed, the adrenaline of being a thoroughbred jockey. And I just, you know, I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. I love the risk, and I love the speed, and I just love thoroughbreds. It's a different kind of horse. I mean, that being said, I love standardbreds too. They're totally different. They're more calm. I think I like the wildness of the thoroughbred.
I love it. Now, unlike standardbreds, where it doesn't really matter the weight nearly as much, thoroughbreds, obviously you have to maintain that weight, that low, that light weight of a jockey. Has that ever been a struggle for you?
No, but definitely when I first started, I was really light, and then I had to build a lot of muscle, and then I, you know, I went from 98 pounds and I gained 10 or 12 pounds, and then you have to be careful. You want to be strong, but you also have to be careful that you are light enough to be comfortable, and you know, not get too heavy. So it's a full-time job. It's not easy to be a perfect weight at 112, 115 pounds. A lot of people say that it's natural. They don't have to work at it, but everybody watches their weight. Everybody watches what they eat. The only person I think I know that doesn't have to worry about their weight is Joe Bravo. I've never seen a jockey eat, like, a cheeseburger and french fries and be able to ride the next day. I think, for the most part, most people are really super healthy and careful what we're eating.
Jockey Chantel Sutherland joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chantel, doing research for this show, I think I want to ask you about one of my favorite stories I read, which is really quite hilarious. Tell us how you got connected with Angel Cordero.
It's a kind of funny story. I was in Canada, and I was at a dinner, and I decided to let them know that I wanted to be a jockey, and there's a trainer there. He laughed, and a couple other people laughed as well, said that I was too pretty to be a jockey, and I didn't have it to be a jockey. And at the time, I really didn't know much about Angel Cordero or the industry. I was really had been studying in college and high school. I just knew about the sport. I didn't know what I know now. And I said, well, what is it that you need to have? Thinking like a student, I could research it or something. And I said, well, you need to, like, Angel Cordero to teach you how to ride, like the Michael Jordan of basketball. And I said, well, where does he live? And they said, Florida. So I called information at the time when we used to have to call information, phone numbers. And I got a Cordero in Miami-Dade, and I called, and it was Angel, and he said, I said, I heard you would teach young jockeys to be jockeys. He said, I do. And I said, well, I want you to teach me. He said, well, where do you live? I said, Canada. And he said, well, I live in Florida. I said, well, I can get a plane ticket. And he said, okay. And I spent pretty much almost a year, like 6 months, in Florida, and worked for a trainer there and worked with Angel. And he taught me a lot.
That's an incredible.
And then I guess after that, I went to Canada and won two sovereign awards, and now I'm here at Churchill Downs.
Guess it worked out all right for you, didn't it?
So, yeah, I guess never tell a kid they can't do something. I don't think anyone should crush anyone's dreams. I mean, but it was maybe the push that I needed. So I don't regret, you know, having that experience. It made me really get off my butt and follow my dream and do what I wanted to do. So I'm grateful to that trainer.
when you first arrived, when you got on that plane to Florida to go meet Angel Cordero, what was your first impression of him?
Oh, he's so small and he's super funny, and he just really, really nice. And he was just, and he was all about working and my body position and the technique.
And what was the best piece of advice he gave you?
I got a lot of advice along the way, but the best thing I learned from Angel was that I didn't even know how to sit in a jockey saddle at the time. I was more of a rider who would use their legs, so I had to learn how to use, you know, more of my body and just my hands. It's just a completely different body position, so, and I had to learn balance. And then as far as, like, advice, I guess I learned from my dad, you know, just don't mix, try not to mix, you know, business with friendship, and don't date trainers or jockeys, but I guess the jockey part didn't work for me.
That's all right. But you're training under the great Angel Cordero in Florida, and why did you decide to go back up to Canada to start riding professionally?
That was my goal. I just wanted to learn and work and really be polished enough to go back to Canada and ride.
And did Angel give you the okay? Did he know you were ready when he sent you off?
He said, you'll know when you're ready when you think you're not ready. And I always thought I was ready, and there's a time where I was like, I don't think I'm ready. And he goes, now you're ready.
Do you remember your first race?
I remember my first race, and looking back, it was about time that I needed to start, but I had a lot to learn. And losing is tough. At the beginning, you know, you lose. I did win, you know, 4 in my first 20 races, which is really awesome. But when it got really competitive and when I started doing really well, you learn that not everyone's your friend and not everyone's happy for you. Your competitors are, you know, not always somebody you can confide in. So I learned to, you know, be a little more discreet, quiet. When I do like a horse, be careful not to say anything. You know, and then it's about playing the game. And when it took me a while to learn to turn the page when I would get upset or a horse wouldn't run good or I wasn't, you know, I didn't win a race, you got to let it go and move on to the next one, because each trainer and each horse wants your best undivided attention, and you have to do that and you have to let the other one go. And in life, it's same kind of things in life. Like when things are not so good, you got to turn it around and make it better and focus on the positive things. Life is short. We have no guarantees of tomorrow. So enjoy your life and enjoy the ups and the downs and know that it's always going to go back up.
I love that. I've always said what I think is the toughest part of riding is the mental ups and downs that come along with the business. You're only as good as your last winner, right? So it's so incredibly tough to maintain that even keel type of attitude that you obviously have. Chantel couldn't have said it better. And one of the ups of your career, obviously taking 2 Sovereign Awards back to back. When you received the first one, what was going through your mind?
It was a really exciting time in my life, and to feel like, you know, when I was younger, I was always trying to prove something to my dad and that I could do it on my own and I was good enough to be a jockey, because he's been a pretty tough, stern father. As he's gotten older, he's gotten much better. Our relationship's gotten better too. But I wanted to prove it to him. But now I don't feel like I have to prove too much anymore. And I love, you know, when you get older, you get more experience and you get to enjoy, you know, life a little more because you're a little wiser. But I was pretty you know, gung-ho, but very happy to win that, and I'm just looking for the next one, Not really enjoying the moment, but now I enjoy the moment a lot more, being older.
When you lost your bug, as they call it, the apprentice weight allowance, Chantal, a lot of jockeys will have difficulties transitioning to a journeyman because you're still young, you're still inexperienced, but you no longer get that weight allowance. Was that a difficult time for you?
There was like a month that was kind of rough, but I remember, you know, not winning for a little bit, but then it picked up again, and I got a really good agent, John Bell, who actually just passed away a little while ago. And when I got him, man, things were amazing. Like, I was always challenging, you know, Patrick Cousins and Mark Cassie, the leading jockey. And this is the most fun time of my life. He was one of my favorite agents I ever had. I've had a couple agents, not a lot. I like to stick with one guy and get to know them. But, it wasn't too bad. I know that it can be really rough for some apprentices. But, you know, I got lucky, and I've had an amazing career.
For you finding so much success, especially early on, did you get any kind of, I guess, sexism? Was it talked about? Oh, you're just a girl. What was that reception like for you?
You know, I didn't get a lot of that in Canada. I did when I came to the U.S., but not in New York, and not like when I first got to California. And then I didn't really feel like it, but you know, you think that being a liberal state that they'd be more open to females, but I felt like Canada and New York, and I even feel Kentucky's more open to female riders. I felt that California was definitely a little, I would say, rougher for girls. You don't see a lot of girl riders there. Julie Crone, retired over there. I mean, she has done really amazing. But you don't see a lot of girls really excel over there. Could just be me, but that was kind of my vibe there. And I was kind of over it. Partly another reason why I kind of left. Not to say that, you know, I'm not, it could totally just be me. I'm not blaming anyone, but kind of felt like that a little bit. I had a couple conversations with trainers, and, you know, they said that's kind of the way it is.
How do you deal with that mentally?
It's unfortunate, and I guess you can't change people's opinions. You just got to, you know, win races, and hopefully they'll become more open to that. I guess it's a generation thing, and hopefully the next generation is going to be different. But it's improved for since a long time ago, that's for sure.
Let's talk about the rider colonies at all the different places you've ridden, Chantal. Obviously, California is known for a lot of speed. Riders really hustle the horse out of the gate. They ride tight. They're, you know, what an outstanding colony of riders typically based at the racetracks in California. But when you were starting out, I've never ridden in Canada myself. Talk about the different riding styles you would find there. Was it any different than in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, Canada, I started off in dirt and then went right to polytrack. So then that's a really patient kind of ride. And then I went from polytrack to Santa Anita. And I went to New York. And that's a dirt track. It's more of a, you got to be smooth. And I just, you know, still could be patient rider. I was more of a patient rider. And then when I hit California, you got to break, and you better be in the race early or else you're going to get left behind. So I had to change my style a little bit and giddy up. And I'm glad that I had experience because it taught me really how to break from the gate well and position early, which has really helped me on the grass course. And I kind of think now with Churchill Downs being the surface that it is on the dirt, I now have both patience and can get them out of the gate in position. And I think it's good. I'm well-balanced and a better rider now with my experience. And I really do love the grass. It's got to be my favorite.
What makes a good grass rider?
I think you need to save ground. One of my greatest lessons was from Jared Gomez. He taught me a few tricks on the grass, and he always said you got to save ground, especially at Santa Anita, because once you get out of that turn, you got the wires right there. I love Churchill because you can come through the turn, be a little more patient, and horses will spread late in the stretch, and there's more opportunity to get through. So you can be more patient on this grass course. And I think it's kind of fun. You don't have to be on the best horse. You can win on a long shot if you can get a good positioning and, you know, get a good trip.
Jockey Chantal Sutherland joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Chantal, you're finding incredible success in Canada, but at one point you decided to make a change. And why did you decide to do that, and where did you go?
Well, I was doing really well in Canada, and then I think one of my biggest mistakes, but it ended up turning into a positive, was I married a trainer, and he happened to be a claiming trainer, and he claimed one of the horses that I was riding, and a lot of trainers got upset and thought that maybe I had been telling the trainer that, and that absolutely was not the case. We had an agreement where he wouldn't claim horses that I rode. Anyway, long story short, that didn't go over well. The relationship didn't work out, a lot of people weren't really cold on me. They really didn't trust me, so I left. I went to New York, and that was the reason I went to New York. And, you know, the rest was history after that, but I'm really grateful that that happened, not that the trainers stopped riding me, or I might have, you know, suggested to anyone that I didn't have integrity, but it made me push me to go to New York. And then I got to go to Florida, and then eventually to California. Then I ran into Game On Dude, and went all over the world. I've been to Japan, Hong Kong, England, Australia, Dubai. So, I don't know. There's different markers in your life that it was a negative but turned into a positive. So, I was kind of, I guess, no regret. But definitely an interesting transition that happened in my life.
Well, Chantal, we need to take a short commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use the monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcott. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too. And I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Game on, dude. Chantal Sutherland trying to become the first female jockey to win the Hollywood Gold Cup, and now he cruises away. Game on, dude. Midway on the far turn, Spud Spivens is out of it. He drops 2.5 lengths behind the favorite front runner, but Richard's Kid is in it, and here comes Richard's Kid. He's about to take second. He's 4 lengths behind his stablemate, and the stage is set for a final 3/16. Game on, dude leads. He's 2.5 in front. Up Richard's Kid to the outside, who is inching up with every stride. Game on, dude, has to stay to the task, and he's doing it. He's 2 lengths in front. Richard's Kid is trying to run him down, but he cannot get by. Game on, dude. Richard's Kid. Game on, dude. Yes. Game on, dude, wins the 73rd Hollywood Gold Cup over Richard's Kid. Bob Baffert runs 1-2.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined this evening by jockey Chantal Sutherland. Chantal, we just heard the replay of your victory aboard Game On Dude in the Grade 1 Hollywood Gold Cup Handicap in 2012. You heard the call. That has to just bring back chills.
Yeah, it's super fun to hear that. And yeah, what an exciting day that was. I remember everything.
What were you thinking? Turning for home, you're in front. Did you know you had the race won?
I guess pretty much just at the wire, because I remember Richard's Kid was coming. I didn't know how fast, you know, he was coming. I know that Game On Dude really likes to fight in a race, but yeah, I was kind of just, you know, had my gut wrenched and just focused on, you know, doing everything I could to make sure that we could get in front of him. So I didn't really know when I had it won, maybe just before the wire. It was kind of a close race.
You made history that day, becoming the first female rider to win that race. But you'd already done that before with Game On Dude when you won the Grade 1 Santa Anita Handicap in 2011. Now, that was an interesting race. Chantal, there was an objection. Of course, looked like, you know, bumping whatever was going on. Turning for home, I've never seen anything like it. Game On Dude absolutely dug in. The most game horse, the name fits, that I've ever seen in a race. Take us through that race.
You know, it was a really crazy race because, you know, when you watch the head on, it looks like I tip out and bother the inside horse. Or so the outside horse to me, but the initial contact was the horse touching my flank. And, you know, I did take a step out around the turn, but I still hadn't bothered anyone. But when I did do that, the inside horse was kind of getting tired, which I recall Joel Rosario was riding it. And he touched Simon Dude's hind end, you know, just like in any, if you're driving a race car or any vehicle, if you tap the back wheel, the front end's going to turn to the right. And that's what happened. And I was able to straighten him back out, keep going forward, and then I got bumped again. He did it again and still recovered and was able to not only get passed by the outside horse and came back on him one, but I had bothered him. So Game On Dude was not only like tenacious, but really showed his athleticism in that race.
Take us through the emotional roller coaster that happens when you dig in like that, you win the race, and then you see the numbers flashing on the tote board, you realize there's a claim of foul, and the long proceedings that follow.
Well, yeah. We were such a long shot, and I guess the pick six a lot of people played it, and I definitely messed up the pick six for a lot of people. So the first time in my life, I had the whole crowd boo me when I went to the winner's circle and took a picture. And then I just got into California, so, it was a bit shocking. You know, I was happy to win for Bob Baffert, my dream of mine to have even written for him. And so things were coming to fruition for me, but I did really upset the fans. And the fans have actually been my most incredible supporters throughout my career. And I upset the pick six. And if they said, you know, make a splash when you get to California, I definitely made a cannonball move. And that was, you know, kind of a bittersweet, but it ended up being, something that had people talking, and it really launched my career to go in a really forward direction. So, you know, I'm really grateful.
At any point, especially on the phone with the stewards during that inquiry and the objection, at any point were you concerned?
Absolutely. From the minute it started to, by the time when they called the guy, it was official and was going to stand, I was terrified. I didn't want to be taken down, not in that situation, not ready for Bob. I was really confident in what happened, but the stewards really needed to watch the replay to see it, and they did. And I'm so grateful for the outcome, the way it happened. And yeah, but I was definitely, my heart was in my throat. I was terrified.
Yeah, even though the crowd might not have been too happy to see you in the winner's circle, I'm sure you took a deep sigh of relief after that was all.
A huge sigh of relief. I was like, oh, thank God. I've been in church for a year.
So let's talk about your relationship with Bob Baffert and how you first got them out on Game On, Dude.
I actually had come to California. You know, I've been in Canada. I came for the wintertime, and I thought I was going to go back to Canada. But when I got to the jocks room, Corey Nakatani said, "Oh, I'm sorry about what happened with your agent." And I said, "Well, what happened with my agent?" He said, "Well, he fired you." I said, "He fired me?" His name was Tommy Ball. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. So I called Tommy. I said, "I heard Corey Nakatani said you fired me." He said, "No, let's meet at the jocks room. I will. I need to talk to you." So he said, "Corey wants to take me to take his book, but he doesn't want to share. So it's either you or him. But I'm loyal to you. If you want me to stay with you, I'll stay with you, and let him go." And I said, "Well, I'm not going to stay here for the summer. I'm going to go back to Canada. And Corey Nakatani is Corey Nakatani. I mean, you got to take them. That's your bread and butter. So do you have any plans, like who I would take?" He said, "Yeah, I got Brian Beach for you. He said he'd do a good job. He's a great agent." I said, "Okay, I'll take him." The next morning, we're walking on the apron, and Game On Dude happens to get in with 115. And just so happens, the only two jockeys left, Corey Nakatani and me. And Bob said he can't do the weight. At that time, I'm not saying he couldn't do it now, but not that particular day. And so he said, Jill Baffert said, "Chantal can do the weight." And Bob said, "I did promise you a horse." And so he said, "Hey, Brian," he walked down first morning, and he said, "Put her on." That was just like the craziest thing, and that's what happened. So I got them out.
And the rest is history, as they say. Chantal, your first graded stakes victory aboard that hearse was the Grade 1 Goodwood in 2011. When was the first time you actually sat on the horse and you knew you had something special?
When was the first time what? Sorry?
You sat on the horse and knew you had something special?
Oh, you mean Game On, Dude?
Yes.
I sat on the same media in the post-graded same media handicap. I'd never been on.
What were your first thoughts of that horse?
Well, from what I had seen, I thought he might have been a closer. And I even wore a visor because I thought I was in the kickback at San Anita was pretty harsh. And I was kind of embarrassed when I got to the winner's circle and I took the visor. I slinged it off because I didn't want anyone to know I'd put that on because he was really a front runner. But I don't know if he actually really knew that until that day. I just kind of let him do what he wanted to do. And I found my most success with horses is when they're happy and comfortable. And, you know, that's kind of what happened. He was happy and comfortable. He broke well. And Mike Smith always told me, when you break from the gate, don't take away anything that comes easy. And I was, like, right on the lead, and he was comfortable. And kind of made a little move at the 7/8 pole, and it's what he wanted. And then he relaxed again at the 3, and then he took off again. And it was kind of like his style, and it's what he wanted to do. And I just stayed out of his way. I didn't try to make him do something that he didn't want to do. And we actually got along. He's a very sweet horse. He's gentle, and he's kind. Like, he's a very nice horse to ride. He's so good on pulse brain. He's just a sweetheart.
He's an incredibly successful racehorse with 16 wins, over $6 million in earnings. You actually were able to ride him in the 2011 Breeders' Cup Classic to a second-place finish that day. Obviously, every jockey's dream to ride in the Kentucky Derby and Breeders' Cup, and you did so with Game On Dude in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Take us through that day.
You know, I was really excited to ride him that day. I really had a good feeling that day, and I knew that, you know, I knew every jockey's silk, and I remember I was blown away by it. When we hit the 3s pole, I thought Johnny B was going to pass me, and then Game On Dude put him away. So You Think came up the inside on the rail. He put him away. I mean, he just kept running. He always had more and more. And then at the end, normally where the wire would be at any racetrack, he's starting to get tired and nobody was around, but I did see the corner of my eye white silks, and that was Billy Mott and Mike Smith, and I was like, oh my God, he's coming fast. And I was tanking, like, there's not much left. You know, Game On Dude had won an incredible winning race already, and that Churchill Downs, that stretch is unbelievable. And I was like, I was having an oh crap moment, and the only chance I could beat that horse is if he came close to Game On Dude where he could see him, and he couldn't see him. He was too far out. He was a cheater, Game On Dude, and he just, you know, he was tired, and he kind of thought he was done, and, you know, Mike nailed me on the wire. But Mike's a fantastic rider. Billy Mott is an exceptional trainer, and, you know, we got beat by some pretty good people and connections and a really great horse. And when I always had the dream that Donna Barton Brothers would come and do the interview with me, and I thought, that's not going to happen. And she came right to me, and she's like, so, how do you feel? Your ex-fiance beat you. And I'm like, oh, God, not so good. But, you know, it's just one of those things. And, I mean, you can't even write that stuff.
Yeah, kind of ironic, obviously. You're very familiar to folks who have tuned in to the Animal Planet's reality show, Jockeys. And throughout that show, you were dating Mike Smith. As you mentioned, you were engaged at one point. So I personally can't imagine anything worse than my ex to beat me in the Breeders' Cup Classic. That had to be, you know, tough to deal with, obviously. But talk about that a little bit, your relationship with Mike. How is that like, dating a jockey you're competing with?
You know, it's important in a relationship to be, you know, have fun competition, but I think we were getting to a different type of competition, so it wasn't really great. But he's a wonderful person, and we have, you know, our ups and downs like any relationship, but he's a really good person. We're really good friends, and I totally respect Mike and have nothing bad to say about him. And I learned a lot from him, and I'm very happy that he's happily married, and, you know, just with a life experience, and unbelievable how that all worked out. But I'm glad that we did jockeys together, and we had a lot of cool experiences. But we weren't the most right for each other. So but we're friends, and relationship.
Well, and talk about riding full time and then also on the side airing this TV show about your life. You're basically just shown out to the public with that reality show Jockeys. You also did work with HBO's Luck. And how do you keep up with it all?
Yeah, you don't even think it's actually, because you're in it, you don't really realize how the scope of it. Until, I think I went to Home Depot, and I was looking for a hammer, and somebody came up to me, and they're like, you should really keep riding. You should not have a baby just yet. I was like, what? But just complete strangers come up to you and start talking to you about your life, and then you realize, wow, I'm really out there. But other than that, you don't really realize it until something like that happens.
Chantel, you actually retired briefly twice, thinking maybe you were suited to the married life and all that comes with it. And obviously you maybe debated about the idea of having kids at one point. Do you have any regrets when it comes to pursuing your passion, pursuing your riding career instead of those things?
Looking back now, because I did not have a kid, that didn't really work out for me. I think I wish I had stayed in racing when I was kind of doing so good. Probably a bad time to have left it. But I guess I had to experience that that wasn't for me, being a mom. And, I had to experience that horse racing is what I really, really love, and I wanted to come back to it. So, I guess that's just the way that my path has gone. But I'm not upset with that either, because I learned a lot, and where, how really I am so passionate about racing, and I really want it to be a part of my life forever. It was just a choice that I made, and I don't regret it, other than maybe I could have stayed a little longer in racing at that amazing time, because I was in the Breeders' Cup and things were going really well. It is hard to come back after 4 years, and to do well, you have to, it's a lot of work. It's like starting all over again. But I'm happy, and I think I'm doing pretty good for my situation right now, and I think the sky's the limit, and I'm just going to stay positive, and I'm really, really happy in my life, and I'm really healthy. And I think happy, healthy, and doing what you love is almost all you can ask for.
Jockey Chantel Sutherland joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chantel, let's talk a little bit about the opportunities you've had to ride overseas, something not everyone gets to participate in or see the world as you've done. Obviously, you were the first female to ride in the Dubai World Cup with, of course, Game On Dude. What was that like to go over there where women are not maybe given the opportunities, of course, they're given here in the United States, to go there and really represent women? How did you feel about that?
I felt really grateful to have that experience and to be able to do that. With the permission of the Sheikh and Bob, because of who Bob is, he made that happen. And I'm so grateful to Bob that he really stood behind that and made it happen. That was all Bob effort. And Jill may have had something to do with that too, I don't know. And I'm grateful to both Bob and Jill. And what an experience. And the women there were just so happy. There were girls that were crying and excited, and I felt so, privileged to do that for women.
What was that experience like in terms of that culture there and going over there? What was it like? Did they lay out the red carpet for you? Or?
Yeah, we get treated really well, but it's so weird not to be spoken to by men. Like, they won't speak to you. You know, they speak to the guys, but they kind of, when you talk to them, they don't answer you. So it's just strange, you know, like, why won't they answer me when I ask them something? And it's just a different kind of world, a little bit. Dubai is, you know, getting a little better, but I would say not that great. I mean, I don't know. It's just strange.
I've never heard that before. That is wild.
Yeah, like, I remember we went to take a picture, and I was like, where's Bob Baffert? You had to give me a leg up in the paddock. And they kept saying, they were waiting, come here. So I'm like, okay. So I kept following this big crowd of men in, you know, their attire. And then they were like, stop, with their hand. I'm like, okay. And then they turned me, and they're like, and they pointed to the camera. But there were no words. So they wanted a picture with me. They wouldn't say it verbally. It was so weird. But, you know, that's their culture. And I'm grateful that they were open to me riding there. And it's just, you know, they embraced me. And I guess, you know, I'm embracing that they embraced me to go there and do that. So I can't judge them. It's just the way they live.
What was the racing scene like there? Obviously, world's richest race at that time, and I'm sure just a huge crowd and a huge, you know, uproar for the actual race. But what differences did you notice as far as racing goes?
It was great. Like, the course and the track out of the world. You can't even imagine. Our hotel room was on the turf course. First class, like, beyond first class. They really took care of the Americans. They treat you like kings and queens, and just really, it was fun and things you've never seen before, like their aquarium at Atlantis, and just like, they build anything, stuff that you can't even, it blows your mind when you see there. It's almost like a Disneyland for adults. Magical. And they love horses, and really something I'm glad that I experienced, for sure. Like, wow.
You've ridden so many other places overseas, Chantal, just to mention a few: Barbados and Hong Kong. You mentioned Australia. Where is your favorite place to ride that's not in the United States or Canada?
You know, I really loved Hong Kong. It was awesome. Like, you're right in the city in Happy Valley. That was gorgeous racetrack, and the fans are insane. And they are just, like, they love racing. I've never seen people so involved and so interested in horse racing. And then Sha Tin is a gorgeous track, and I just love the vibe. I really like Hong Kong. The second would be, I loved Australia. Super cool. Kind of like Kentucky a little bit, but more water. And then I loved England. Was nice, very nice. Japan. It was interesting how just the history and how beautiful, how old Japan is, but so expensive. And then where else? Yeah, then the United States I love. Canada is great, but I definitely, my favorite place, I think, to ride is Del Mar. And I think my second track now is Churchill and Keeneland. I love the circuits at Keeneland, but I love Churchill Downs as well. I love it here in Kentucky.
What was it like to ride the Trotter in Australia?
Really, really fun. Very exciting. We've lined up behind the car with the gate. And they told me that when you go to the gate, you want to get there as the gate's moving away, so you don't have to slow down. You have momentum. And I think I was a little off in my timing. I came a little too late, so they kind of got away from me. But I was able to close a lot of ground, and I was second. It's very exciting, super fun. I had a great time. People in Australia are so nice. And I got to experience the city and just some fun people. And their accents was great. And I've always been able to stay in nice hotels, and everybody's always, you know, given us first class seats on the airplane. So definitely very grateful for all those experiences.
Chantel, we only have just a few minutes left here on the show. Two last questions for you here. What advice would you give to a young woman who came up to you and wanted to pursue a career as a jockey?
I would say it's very important to work on your fitness, your health. You definitely need to work a lot on your technique. You have to know that you're comfortable and not afraid of horses, that that's a really comfort zone for you. It has to definitely be your why, your passion. And, you know, it's nice to have fun and do fun stuff, but it's very important to be business and always do your research when you're, you know, studying for a horse, or, I mean, you could Google your trainer that you're going to ride for. Always know something about them. And when you go to the paddock, being a woman, I would say call your trainer before the race so you can know your instructions, so that when you get to the paddock, you can compliment his wife on her purse or her shoes. Not to be confused that it's completely business and nothing else is going on.
I like that. What do you do for fun in your spare time?
Right now, playing golf. I just picked it up. I love it. And I do cycle class. Cycle bar here in Louisville.
Well, Chantel, good luck there on the golf course. Unfortunately, we are all out of time. Can't thank you enough, and continued success here in Kentucky.
Thank you so much.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jog Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thanks for listening.